Welcome to the National Center for Science Education podcast covering events of September 27, 2005 in the Kitzmiller et al. Versus Dover Area School District trial currently taking place in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. In this podcast, you'll hear Dr. Eugenie C. Scott and Nick Motzke discussing aspects of the fact witness testimony on September 27th.
Now we're going to discuss the first fact witnesses presented in the case by the plaintiffs. This followed Ken Miller's cross-examination and redirect testimony on Tuesday morning. This was the 27th of September, that Tuesday morning.
Yeah, we should probably mention for posterity that the original plan was for Barbara Forrest to testify after Ken Miller. However, Barbara Forrest lives in Louisiana, and they're having a few problems with transportation these days. So because Barbara couldn't make it in time for the trial, the lawyers decided to put some of the fact witnesses, and I actually think it worked out better that way.
I think it worked very well, and it will give people a little bit of time to digest Ken Miller's extensive testimony.
Good point.
And it also brings the case back from the experts to the actual plaintiffs. And the first plaintiff was the lead plaintiff, Tammy Kitzmiller, who I'll just briefly describe, mm-hmm. is a young woman. She has a few children. I don't actually remember.
Two children.
I think she has two children.
They're teenagers, high school students.
And she's has blonde hair. She's not too tall. And she's not particularly bold on the stand, but everyone said it was a very brave thing for a plaintiff to come forward, both for the case and endure the trial of this trial, and also to take the stand and say why she thought this policy violated her and her children's constitutional rights. So, go ahead.
And the next fact witness to testify was another plaintiff, Barry Callahan, who is a middle-aged lady, short, I don't know, probably in her 40s or something, mm-hmm. Parents of an 11th grader in the Dover school right now, and a couple of older children. And she's a former school board member.
For many years.
Right, from apparently, if I wrote this down correctly, from 1993 to 2003. So she served a long time on the board.
She knew, and so she was very familiar with the usual procedures and also with the politics in Dover.
And that was very useful. And she did, her testimony was very interesting because I think we learned a lot about the interactions of various Dover School Board members. Basically, she testified to the fact that there were school board members who clearly had religious motivations for policies that were passed later after she was off the board. And although she still retained an interest in the district and went to meetings and was active and so forth, so it's not like she went off the board and then disappeared. And she's, of course, that is part of the plaintiff's lawyer's approach of demonstrating that there was a purpose for passing the policy that was essentially religious rather than having any kind of proper educational value. I think she was a pretty effective witness. There was one part where, seeing a trial like this really helps you understand how hard it is to be a witness, because it was important for Mrs. Callahan to talk about things that went on at school board meetings. I actually have been on a witness stand, and it's a very rattling kind of experience. I mean, you are nervous. It's not just that you're the center of attention, but a lot depends upon your saying the right thing. And they don't let you take any notes. You can't take any notes up there with you. You just have to do this from your memory.
The most important thing is, yes, it has to be your own memory that you are testifying to. And there are cases in which you're allowed to refresh your recollection. And that's a term of art in law.
Yeah, there was a debate about that.
And there were some debates about the finer points of this during the day. But basically what it means is that you recount what you can remember directly off the top of your head, and then they will give you, for example, a newspaper article and ask if this refreshes your recollection. So if that jogs your memory on something, and this is not unusual because just imagine recounting something that happened a year ago, just on any particular day, some meeting you went to, some, you know, office meeting you had. Just off the top of your head, it can be very difficult to remember everything that happened. And so various documents can be used to refresh your recollection so you can read them. It might jog your memory as to something that happened. But then it's important when you testify, you're not allowed to, you know, read off that document. And so this came up with several witnesses, these various things. Usually they would...
Mostly with Callahan.
Yeah, Barry Callahan in particular, because she'd been at some of the key meetings. Yeah.
It's a tough thing to do. It's not like any of these people are professionals. I don't know, Ken is, I guess, just because he's a teacher. But, you know, they hung in there. And she really did provide a lot of information about things that had gone on at school board meetings, things that had gone on in board retreats in which comments were made that were definitely religion promoting and so forth. So her testimony, I think, was very useful in establishing that.
One other thing I should add about Barry Callahan is that she had some science background. She was a psychology student.
Has a master's degree in psychology.
Yes, and so she'd had some biology. And although, you know, she wasn't terribly familiar with evolutionary biology, she sniffed out some of the problems with pandas.
Yeah, that was pretty neat.
And this was one of the reasons she was one of the main people opposed to adopting pandas in the school, in the school district. And in particular, she noted that many of the footnotes were 20 to 30 years old.
Yay, go Barry.
Which was an important point, which is something that people notice, but it's not something that's brought up much. But.
And kind of a big factual part of her testimony was the foot dragging that took place about actually purchasing the books after they were approved. There were board members who just did not want to buy these modern biology books without being able to balance them with some form of creation.
And so, according to Barry Callahan's testimony, this whole controversy, which we all started hearing about in the summer of 2004, actually began in 2002 and 2003 when textbooks came up to be, to buy new textbooks, and there was continual delays over adopting new textbooks. So that was some of the early history that we heard.
And in the cross examination of Barry Callahan, didn't take very long, but it seemed to me that what he was trying to do is establish the idea that the kinds of meetings were like the board retreats where comments had been allegedly made about religious motivation were not official meetings of the board meeting, so I think he'll probably work on that someplace. It kind of seemed to me that he was trying to separate out, you know, Bonsall and Buckingham from the other board members, but maybe that was just my imagination. He also had a line of questioning that was kind of interesting, that maybe trying to separate out Callahan from other board members, pointing out that people who might have supported her position or who later on supported this is backwards, but people who later on voted against pandas and people and the policy didn't second her vote when she was on the board on a matter having to do with going forward with buying these books, taking the money out of escrow and so forth. So he may be trying to kind of isolate her as somebody who is not really mainstream, as it were, as a board member, but that's just a speculation. The next fact witness to be deposed was another plaintiff, a teacher of physics named Brian Rehm. He and his wife are both plaintiffs in this case, and they have four kids and in the school district, and he used to teach for the district and had all sorts of great gossip about relationships among teachers and crabbing about these
teacher meetings and all kinds. He was in the science department until I believe the spring 2004, and then he got another job nearby. Just to describe his general personality a little bit, he is a tall guy.
He's a tall guy.
I think he's 6'6" or something.
Yeah, well,
I don't know if he's quite that tall, but he's a large guy.
I'd say my husband's 6'4", so I'm pretty good at estimating heights. He's at least 6'4", maybe even 6'5".
So he's a very tall guy.
Seems like late 20s, maybe
late
early 20s, 30s.
Yes,
young
he has
that's young to me.
Yeah, I believe he has four kids, and he has a very deep voice. Yeah. And dark hair and a mustache. And he was not, you know, particularly, I wouldn't say he was chatty, but he did have some of the science teacher in him, so he tended to be rather precise, mm-hmm. Even though he talked, you know, in a very low voice and was a little bit gruff, I suppose you would say.
I think he was an effective witness, though.
I think he was very effective because he'd been involved in many of the early struggles between basically the science teachers and the school board, which had been going on long before this hit the news. I guess we can just summarize a few of the major things that he testified to. One that really sticks in my mind is that the school board showed the Discovery Institute video Icons of Evolution to the science teachers. And this was part of a long process of pushing the idea for balancing evolution with creationism, that word creationism. That idea was pushed by members of the school board to the science teachers many times. And I don't remember all the details of what was testified to, but that was the gist, that there were many, they have, you know, meetings of the staff, and representatives of the school board or the administration would come and attempt to push this with the science teachers, and the science teachers would resist, explaining that this isn't good science. And one other thing I should mention is that Brian Rehm explained that what they taught in Dover School, Dover High School, was microevolution. It's not as if they were teaching, you know, even, quote, common monkeys to man. They weren't teaching macroevolution. And, of course, microevolution, macroevolution is a creationist exploited buzzwords. They do have a real meaning, but they're usually misconstrued. But all I'm saying is that Dover High School was not a hotbed of, you know, Richard Dawkins fandom or atheistic materialism or any of these sorts of things. You know, it was a place where the treatment of evolution was already very limited. And so that was the status quo in Dover. And so I think that was revealing, at least to me, mm-hmm. That, you know, this was not a...
we ain't in Berkeley anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, tomorrow we will summarize what happens on Wednesday's day of testimony. Wednesday we'll have some more... we'll have one of the scientific or professional witnesses, Robert Pennock, the philosopher of science who wrote Tower of Babel and also Intelligent Design and Its Critics, and several articles critical of intelligent design. It's actually a minor research area of his. He will be testifying tomorrow morning. There may be some interesting things for us to report tomorrow about after Rob Pennock finishes testifying. There's a discussion going on, and in fact a secondary parallel lawsuit going on, about whether reporters for the two local newspapers will be compelled to testify, and this is a very difficult issue. But this issue has to do with statements that are made by the plaintiffs about quotes from the school board members, which school board members deny having
correct.
Made.
Yes.
But these quotations, the comments attributed to the school board members, are reported in the newspapers. So whether the reporters, I mean, what the plaintiff side would like is for the reporters to testify that, yes, they reported accurately, which they have actually done with affidavits. But it's a complicated issue, and clearly there's a lot of legal concern among reporters these days, with the New York Times reporter having gone to jail and so forth. But this issue does not involve things like confidential sources or anything like that. So we may or may not have anything to report on that tomorrow. This is something that may go to appeal and whatever.
Speaking of the media, I think we'll save it for later, but there's a lot of media around, and we've spent an awful lot of time talking to them.
One reason why we haven't been able to do this.
Yeah, it's the first example I've seen of what they call pack journalism. And that was the case for the first 2 days. But we'll talk more about that later.
Tune in next time.
And
we promise to be less verbose.
We promise to be less verbose, but this was the first time. And honestly, this probably is better than blogging, because every time I sit down to write, I fall asleep. So this is much better.
And in fact, you better hop in a cab and get back to your hotel,
because so.
We both need some sleep.
It's quite late. So thank you for listening, and tune back in.